Hello and welcome back to the podcast. I'm Michael.
I'm Noe.
And we are the Knights of Entertainment, a podcast covering your favorite and unknown movies, games, comic books, anime, and more weekly. We appreciate you being here and hope you enjoy the show. Let's go ahead and get started. Alrighty, so this is a continuation of last week's artifacts that are within the DC universe. We will start off with the next one, which is The Lasso of Truth.
Okay.
It exists in every universe for the DC universe, so like Earth 2, Earth 1, all of them. The dimensions of it, it's potentially infinite in length, so it can actually...
Still just like my penis.
Yeah.
That was too easy of a layup.
Yes, it was. The owners, the current one is Wonder Woman. Previous owners are Hippolyta, Artemis, Batman on Prime Earth, Cheetah, and Steve Trevor.
Batman had one?
Yes.
Tell me what the Joker's doing. You got like, the lasso compels you, the lasso just compels you.
It also was first seen in June of 1942 in Sensation Comics number 6.
Yeah, because that motherfucker loved bondage. I mean, the guy that created Wonder Woman loved him some bondage. Unlike any motherfucker I've ever known.
So, originally on Earth 2, the lasso was created from Aphrodite's magical girdle by the Amazon's craftswoman, Metalia. At the behest of Queen Hippolyta, and its magical properties were granted by the goddess herself and by Athena. The lasso forced whoever was bound within it to obey the commands of the user. This effect could also be used on groups of people, although this basically reduces its efficacy. So you could control an entire group of people, but the less potent it would be.
Huh.
Which is a weird, like, you wouldn't expect that.
But I guess crazy for like 100 people to tell the truth at once. Probably a bit overwhelming.
Yeah, and I think it's probably kind of like you can only, like, everybody's willpower kind of fights back against, like, depending on who was it? Was it Batman that actually resisted it at one point? I can't remember.
I don't know.
In addition to being physically unbreakable, the lasso is also infinitely elastic.
Infinitely elastic.
Elastic. Eventually, Diana expanded the lasso's powers by coating it with a special Amazon chemicals. This allowed the weapon to transform her civilian clothes into Wonder Woman garb.
What?
Yeah.
I thought she would just spin in a circle.
And sling lasso around her.
What would the lasso have to do with her changing her clothes? A weird fucking choice by the writer.
Yes. However, another slightly different...
titties pop out. She got two piercings, one on her nipple. This starts writing weird shit in his fucking notes.
He was a freak, so, you know.
I'm a freak. That man's a whole different level. That's another thing about writers. They have like the just copious notes and the randomest shit.
Yeah.
You should see my fucking notebook. It looks like a fucking serial killer's fucking journal. It's just my writing idea.
All right. However, on another slightly different Earth 2 origin story tells that the lasso was designed by the goddess Aphrodite herself from the magical girdle along with Wonder Woman's uniform. Diana has demonstrated a remarkable level of skill with the lasso, performing such feats as twirling it in to create air currents, which upon she could float, and spinning to emit certain frequencies that disrupt Felix Faust's spells.
He's like, you bitch.
Like you're a master sorcerer.
Yeah, like you bitch. You fucking spin the fucking rub and you're like, your whole fucking shit just like evaporated.
It's like, you fucking bitch.
Like the most complex spell, it took me 17 hours to conjure.
And he was one of the ones that it took, like, his spells were forever. Like, he had all the setup and shit and ritualistic shit.
Like, 72 incantations wrapped up into a 15 sorcerer circles, and you ruin it with your spinning fucking rope. How dare you?
With a lasso. During post-crisis, the lasso was forged by Hephaestus, the god of metalworking, from the Golden Girdle of Gaia. The lasso is completely unbreakable, immutable, and indestructible. It also is capable of altering its length based on the wielder's needs. Among its powers are the ability to restore lost memories, cast hypnosis, dispel illusions, and protect those within its circumference from magical attacks.
And also ruin Felix Faust. It's like just specifically his stuff. Like, motherfucker!
And it's not even her villain. That's the most fucked up part. Because it's Dr. Fate's...
Like, god dang it, this fucking lasso...
Empowered by the fires of Hestia, the lasso forces anyone held within it to tell and understand the absolute truth. This power in particular can be very dangerous, as not everyone is capable of facing the truth of their actions, stripped bare of
she
excuses.
She should be a fucking lawyer.
Kano.
Your Honor, can I use the lasso of truth?
Isn't she like a historian there?
Yeah, she should be a fucking lawyer. Just put that shit underneath their seat before they fucking take the stand.
It's like, tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth. And he's like, I did kill him.
The Amazon Artemis, inexperienced with the use of the lasso, inadvertently drove a man to suicide after trying it on him. And the lasso reduced both Captain Nazi and Ares, god of war, to tearful surrender by revealing to them the truth of their violent actions.
Damn.
Captain Nazi.
Captain Nazi.
You remember him?
Yeah, quite the hero.
Recently, the lasso has been shown to actually transport Diana's mind into the mind of whoever is tied within it.
What?
Yeah. It's a weird...
It's overly complicated bullshit.
Yes. When the villain Genocide gained control of the lasso and had it implanted into her body, she used its powers to directly attack her victim's souls, and was able to bring even more powerful, strong-willed opponents like Green Lantern John Stewart low with ease, demonstrating the lasso's frightening potential as a weapon in the wrong hands. With Wonder Woman's strength and speed, the lasso can be used as both an offensive and defensive weapon. And then we have the Lasso of Truth within the New 52 and DC Rebirth, which is, God, I will never let them let this shit down because it was horrible. So the lasso in the New 52, also called the Golden Perfect, is a long-cherished divine relic of the Amazons, handed down by the patron gods to their chosen people's champion as a symbol of trust. When Steve Trevor first came to Themyscira, Diana had earned the Perfect after winning the championship game to decide who would return him and his fallen brethren to man's world. The lasso also requires the purest of hearts in order to wield it, meaning between the two users, the Perfect lasso chooses the wielder it has judged most worthy. So it basically becomes Mjolnir. That's why I said the New 52 is fucking stupid. Over the following years, Diana and various others would discover some of its unique powers and properties, such as tethering hearts and minds together in various individuals could become, they could start to become better understanding of one another, creating a telepathic rapport between them and everyone holding on to it, and enabling language translation and memory and emotional sharing. The lasso also boasts a powerful binding and sealing ability, seeming to pulsate with an innate energy that can entrap and tame the souls of gods and demigods alike. It can also be used as a lifeline in order to seek out those who are lost to the user. But this requires an emotional connection to someone for this actually to work. It also forces those entrapped by the Perfect to face their own falsehoods. Individuals who have been altered in a metaphysical manner are forced to undergo a biophysical reset when ensnared by the Lariat, making the enhanced revert back to their base self. This can relieve an individual from the effects of toxins or poisons, as well as seize the effects of mind control.
Hmm.
So it's got a bunch more abilities from the New 52.
And also ruins Felix Faust's spells.
See, if it's anyway,
we don't know where he fucking goes.
He had all this stuff enhanced on his body.
Like, damn it.
So all the enhancements are gone. Everything that he just spent 30 hours doing.
Like he's taking on the entire Justice League, and she rolls up. Like, is that the fucking belt? And he just fucking gives up. Like, is that that fucking whip? God dang it.
I'm done. The next one they have on the list is the Cosmic Treadmill.
The Cosmic Treadmill.
You've heard of that too?
I've heard of it, but I don't remember anything about it.
Not really? Lead designer of it was Barry Allen. Place of creation was Central City. The place of destruction was the Nexus in the Arrowverse only, not within the actual comic books.
Hmm.
Previous owners are Barry Allen, Flash Museum, and Eobard Thawne. First appeared in December of 1961 in the Flash number 125.
Be something they would make back then.
Yeah.
I think about it, it's a treadmill, right? But it's like
you go backwards in time.
Yeah.
Or forwards in time.
He's just fucking smoking weed. and the faster you go, the faster through time you go. And then like you can start going through different dimensions and if we just passes out.
All right. So it was powered by cosmic rays and was coordinated with radioactive pulses from a cosmic ray clock. It released positive radiation when moving forward, sending its user into the future, and negative radiation when moving backwards, sending its user into the past.
That's what gives you fucking cancer.
Yes, it does.
Jesus, radiation back and forth.
Near the end of his construction, Barry only had one bug to fix. The positive radiation, which sent him into the future, caused an electromagnetic reaction in his body, charging him with positive ions and making him a living magnet.
He gave him a tumor, too.
All the radiation.
It's like a ball fit like a fucking fist right in his gut. Jesus.
Barry used the cosmic treadmill in many of his exploits. He needed only to program what year he wanted to go to and jump on. He had to keep an internal vibration while in the new time period. As soon as he wanted to return to the 20th century, he just released the internal vibrations and he went home.
I don't know why I thought about this, but like that vibration stuff. Yeah. Just imagine him in bed. Like, you ready, girl? He just starts laughing.
Didn't they make fun of that in the Flash TV show?
I don't know. But where, man.
He was getting excited and he started vibrating.
I don't know, but that'd be some freaky shit. Imagine he's a freak.
Phases through.
Like, oh, baby, I'm sorry.
He used to travel to the 25th.
His finger game must be immaculate, though.
No girl is ever unhappy.
No butthole ever unfit.
He brings both fingers out. He used it to travel to the 25th century and to save the future from an atomic clock that had been sent there in a time capsule and was going to turn into an atomic bomb. On his trip, he had a first encounter with Professor Zoom. Before the crisis of infinite Earths, he could also use to travel to other universes. After Barry's disappearance during the crisis, Jay Garrick and Wally West, along with the Earth 1 and Earth 2 Superman, used the treadmill to travel to Earth 2, only to find a black void. Wally noted that it was destroyed beyond repair after the trip. However, that must not have been the case, since it appeared in later stories.
Guess he was wrong.
The cosmic treadmill eventually became into the possession of the Flash Museum. It was an instrumental in the Wally West's defeat of Professor Zoom in the museum. Wally threatened to use it to visit Zoom as a young man in the future and torment him, or just kill him in his crib. It's kind of fucked up.
How fun! Like, that would be like the darkest. Like some supervillain just gets there, right? Like all you see in the panel is like he comes. Like it's a dark fucking baby room, right?
Yeah.
And like there's nothing in the first panel, and then like the next panel it's Zoom in the shadows of the room, right? The next panel is you see him walking up to the crib. The next panel is the baby in the crib. Then it pans. The next panel is Zoom, right? Then the next panel is just him fucking punching in the crib. You never see him punch the baby. But you say just bah, bah, bah. How fucked up.
That is fucked up, though. And this is Wally threatening him.
Well, damn.
That's the Flash. That's why it's even more fucked up. Yeah. That's why I said it's even more fucked up.
I mean, Barry, I jerked you off at high speed when you were when you first.
And I killed you in your crib.
Oh, man.
Wally sent the controls to Zoom's era, began to run, and jumped off so fast that Zoom couldn't see him. Thinking that Wally had really gone into the future, Zoom chased him.
Wait, they have super, they have hyper awareness, right? Because they're super speed. You didn't see him jump off. They can't see me jump to the, he just jumped out of the side. So that motherfucker's gone. God dang Harry Houdini. I better follow after him.
Zoom chased after him, only to be sent to his home century defeated. After Jenny...
They put the calculations perfectly for him to end up right in jail. Like, just pass go. Don't get $200 straight to jail.
fuck. After Jenny Ognatz, excess of the Legion of Superheroes, had been stranded in the 20th century, she was trying to find a way to return to her friends. It just so happened that another time traveler, John Fox, Flash of the 27th century, was also in town at the time. He, using technology from his own suit, reconfigured the treadmill so that Jenny would not have to keep internal vibrations to remain in the 30th century. The treadmill eventually wound up in an antique shop in the 25th century.
Wow, what the fucking illustrious ending. It's such a powerful device.
It looks like a treadmill.
It's some old guy's fucking attic.
There, it was stolen by Eobard Thawne, who used it to travel back to the 20th century and pose as Barry Allen. Yeah.
I mean, he just tarnishes his career by being the worst Flash ever.
That would suck so bad. Next item that we have from the DC Universe is the Bracelets of Submission.
Ah. That's something I can get behind. Wonder Woman's next item.
It's exactly.
They only work on Felix Faust for some reason. It's like, son of a bitch.
Everything she's got. And it's like, it's not even her villain, and everything that she's got works against her.
It's like, why do you keep fucking with me?
So the current owner, obviously, is Wonder Woman and the Amazon.
I was fucking joking, by the way. I didn't know it was actually Wonder Woman.
Yeah, the Bracelets of Submission.
Wow. I fucking hit that one on the nail, or hit the nail on the head on that one.
First appeared in 1942 in January.
And it was 1942. I wonder who wrote it.
All-Star Comics number 8.
Oh, Lord.
So
that man was a tarry.
The Bracelets...
By the way, I like the fact that you can, like, someone can portray their freak in such an innocuous way.
Yes.
Like, you can just put it right under the sensors. Like, that man was deep into bondage. He could somehow put it into a kid's fucking comic book.
Where she loses her powers when she's in bondage?
Yeah, but, like, somehow, like, it's just enough that it's not, like, censored.
Because you're not really paying that much attention. It's like, okay. She always ends up bound up. But
yeah, like, always ends up bound up. Always somehow escapes or someone frees her.
Uh-huh.
And then she beats the villain.
Yes.
Weird.
Because you wouldn't think about that as a kid.
But man, if it, like, your dad walks in what you're reading, and he's like, what the fuck is this? I need to see these.
All right, so the bracelets of submission are given to every Amazon at the age of 15. At which
Damn,
time,
at least wait till they're 18, you fucking freak.
At which time they pledge themselves to the service of Aphrodite.
One night with Aphrodite.
Yes, at the age of 15.
Oh, fuck.
Used primarily for defense. They were also used in the trial game known as Bullets and Bracelets. In which an Amazon would deflect bullets using one of their
silver,
bracelets.
Her silver bracelet, is that what they are?
Yeah.
They're
called Bracelets of Submission.
Oh.
Oh.
Good Lord.
The bracelets had one serious disadvantage, however.
They were not bulletproof.
As they would remove the wearer's strength if any man wielding chains on them.
Oh, of course.
That's why they call it submission bracelet.
Lord.
On New Earth, though.
But I just imagine him sitting in his fucking office just smoking a cigar, right? Bracelets of submission. Fucking writing a full fucking 22-page story. Half an hour, fucking rock fucking hard. Like, here we fucking go.
You know how many different stories are probably on Rule 34 about that?
They don't need Rule 34. That motherfucker did it himself within the actual continuity.
All right. On New Earth, though, despite having an increased durability that allows them to withstand blunt force, the Amazons are still vulnerable against smaller projectiles. They use
like Captain America,
in the MCU, kinda, yeah.
Like he was like he could take a beating, but he still gets shot. He still got hurt.
Right. Basically, they wear the bracelets to deflect arrows and bullets. That's their whole point.
Awesome, yeah.
Wonder Woman has a special pair created by Hephaestus from the remains of Zeus's Aegis. The shield that had been destroyed in battle against Cronus and Hera secreted the remains. The silver bracelets with red stars were meant for the champion of the Amazons, which Diana became after winning the contest by bullets and bracelets. Basically, they're blindfolded and...
Yeah, they got block bullets.
Yes. On Prime Earth, the bracelets are worn by all Amazons of Themyscira and are used for protection in combat. Created from the metal of Athena's Olympian Aegis shield, they also double as potent restraining bolts and limit an Amazon's true power, enabling a massive strength boost whenever they are relinquished. Diana had her own pair of bracelets modified by the blacksmith god Hephaestus. While these modifications, she can still use any number of weapons created in his forge at will. So it basically allows her to draw her sword.
Why would they weaken them? That doesn't make any sense. That's like the worst fucking trade-off.
Yeah.
It'd be like if I had boots. That made me, like, super speed, but they made me blind. If you ever play Morrowind, you know exactly what I mean.
Yeah.
You know these boots called Boots of Blinding Speed?
Mm-hmm.
But they made you blind.
Yeah. And what's really weird, in Prime Earth, Wonder Woman's bracelets were forged from eighth metal. How there's an nth metal. And
oh, yeah.
Like, the whole metals series. That
weird, like, nymph. Nymph metal.
Yes.
I hate that word, nymph. N-T-H.
Nymph metal. So in Prime Earth, it was like part after the New 52. It's just, it's gotten weird.
So the weird part is the fucking fact that they get weaker when they put them on. It's like the trade-off is way like, yeah, I can block bullets, but I can't lift a fucking feather.
Yeah, it is a weird trade-off. But I guess it, like if they were in an actual fight and they knocked them off, they'd get a huge boost.
Just knock someone's head off.
Yeah.
Fucking boom.
Just turn around and just a gut punch. It's like their whole stomach is just knocked out of their body.
Yeah.
Spine just angling.
God.
All right. Next one we have is the Mobius chair.
The Mobius chair. Number one now?
Two.
Number two?
Number two.
Is that the one that Batman used at? How many Jokers are there?
Yes.
There's 273.
Yep. First appeared in New Gods number one in 1971. Previous owners are Wally West, Thomas Wayne Jr., Bruce Wayne, Metatron, and Mobius.
Wally West?
Mm-hmm. So on
that was a New God artifact.
It was.
Okay.
It was. Basically, on New Earth, obsessed with his quest for knowledge, Metron dedicated his life to the creation of a device that could traverse time and space. He called the device the Mobius chair, and to power it, he needed element X, the same element he used to create the boom tubes. However, knowledge came with a cost, and to get enough element X for the Mobius chair, he had to make a bargain with Darkseid, giving Apocalypse the technology of the boom tube. Logically, Darkseid used the technology to make war with New Genesis. Yeah.
Surprise.
Metron used the chair.
All right, here's the deal. I'll give you this right for that, mm-hmm. but you cannot invade us. He's like, bad deal. Like the next day, surprise.
Surprise, motherfucker.
Like, you fucking promised me.
It's like, eh.
It's like at the store where like you're not getting cashback, are you? Of course not. And they get cashback. You liar.
They ask for 40 back.
They ask for like a 200 back. I'm like, God dang.
So Metron used the chair to travel through time, space, and other dimensions at will. The Mobius chair was equipped with tractor beams powerful enough to pull a planet from its orbit.
Jesus.
So it's a very powerful...
It just throws the fucking moon into the sun.
Yes. On Prime Earth, the chair was created by Mobius, also known as the Anti-Monitor, to assist in his quest for knowledge. He later gave it to Metron, but it was taken from him by Batman.
So I'm going to take this chair, by the way. How the fuck do you take a whole fucking chair? You just see Batman walk out with it over his shoulder, like, I'm leaving with this, fuck you.
After the events of the Darkseid War, Owlman took control of it for a short time, making Grid with him inside of the chair. However, when Owlman, Grid, Metron, and the Mobius chair arrived on the moon, they met a mysterious force that killed them all, leaving the Mobius chair vacant.
Yeah, it was lack of oxygen.
The chair reappeared during Wally West's travels across the multiverse. It helped Wally understand how the events of Flashpoint ended up unmooring him and his kids from reality.
Yeah, but you done fucked up the entire continuity of reality.
Yes. After spending one night with his kids, Wally willingly sat on the chair, allowing himself to take possession of the knowledge it held. After seeing his kids safely return, Wally realized that the chair was actually touched by the mysterious force, granting it its power. So, some of the
Wait, does it have sentience?
Yes, somewhat, yeah. So, capabilities. The Mobius chair is Metron's technological masterpiece and allows him to cross time, space, and interdimensional barriers. Its only power, known power source is Element X. Some of its function resemble a mother box, such as...
two double A...
That would be so fucked up.
We got 9 volt in the bag.
So it allows nigh omniscience. The Mobius chair gives its user near omniscient sight and understanding of the universe. It contains all knowledge of the new gods, maps, and history of all locations visited by Metron. It also later imbued the power with the Doctor of Manhattan. This added Manhattan's atemporal vision to the chair.
Good Lord, with his fucking blue dick swinging back and forth.
And ability to see the past, present, and future simultaneously.
Shit, that would be fucking jarring. Yeah. Especially for our type of, like, limited perception.
Yes.
Having to see everything at once. Fucking yeah. Shit myself.
And then you not shit yourself, and then you deal with the aftermath of shitting yourself all at once.
Like, all at the same time, I gave it the, like, absolute, like, incomprehensible reality of all of existence. I shit myself, and I've just finished shitting myself.
And you haven't yet?
The shame of shitting myself. All at the same fucking time.
All points in time. It also...
40 years later when they made Philly, remember what happened? You shit yourself all at once.
The Mobius' chair main capability is to travel and teleport through space, time, and other dimensions. In a matter of mere seconds, it can also fly. Or hover on its own.
What would be the point? Just fucking, if you can teleport everywhere.
Yeah.
That'd be the least of its abilities.
Due to Dr. Manhattan imbuing his anti-crisis energy into the chair, Wally West was able to draw upon it, this energy, to also project energy, like as an energy projection. The Mobius chair enables its user to survive the rigors of space and other environments.
All right, so...
Because otherwise that'd be fucked up.
Yeah.
It can also, has a powerful force field to protect itself from any attacks and can also be used to contain enemies. Even metahumans with the power to phase cannot cross this field. So Wally West couldn't phase into it.
Huh.
It can create holograms.
Like it bumps into it at high speed and just fucking disintegrates.
Yeah.
Shit.
It can create holograms to distract his enemies or display information. The Mobius chair chooses who is worthy and capable of using it. If the person isn't worthy, its power will overwhelm and outright kill the individual trying to use it.
and just like a whole bunch of spikes just come out of the bottom, straight up in your ass.
Yeah.
Like, oh, shit.
The chair requested Tempest Fugonaut to bring Wally West to be its host, determining him to be worthy of wielding this power.
Hmm.
And the last artifact that we have is the Spear of Destiny.
Okay.
So it is a unique bottle. That's it, like it's classified as unique.
Bottle?
Model.
Oh, model.
A unique bottle.
It was like a random bottle.
It is the only version of the Spear of Destiny, so there's not a different one within any of the Earths. There is one Spear of Destiny.
Just one universe?
Like, it can be found within any of the universes, but there is one.
That's wild.
Like, any others don't have its power to it. It's reported to be the spear that pierced Christ's side on the cross. The spear holds supernatural powers, which allows the possessor to control the minds of superpowered beings. Current owner is the Justice League. So, how we were wondering about that when we talked about Spectre.
Oh, yeah, who had the, yeah.
The Justice League is the one that has it. Previous owners, the Sentinels of Magic, Gaius Cassius, Dragon King, Superman, Vandal Savage, and the one and only Adolf Hitler. That's why the Spectre didn't fight during World War II. First appearance was in 1977 in Weird War Tales, number 50.
What a fucking great choice for title.
Weird War Tales.
Yeah, Jesus.
So, yeah, that's the Spear of Destiny.
It has many abilities. One of them is to ruin Felix Faust's spells. But this too, huh?
It's like, this too shall pass.
Like, everything just fucks with his spells. The price is the surrender of the fucking Mobius chair.
Yeah. So, let's see here. In World War II, the spear had many different owners throughout the years. The spear's most pivotal role came in World War II as it fell into the hands of Adolf Hitler. The control of the spear by the Third Reich prevented American superheroes, particularly those magic-based origins or powers, from intervening in the war, creating a sphere of influence that would affect both heroes to fall, that would affect such heroes to fall under Hitler's sway whenever they came into it.
Ooh, that's dangerous.
Yeah. The spear was used towards the end of the war by the cornered Captain Nazi who attacked Spectre with it, nearly killing him and precipitating the end of the war. However, before its loss, Hitler used a magical ritual to taint the weapon, corrupting any who wielded it with his greed and power lust. So in the modern era, after the war, the spear came into the hands of the Allies and was placed in storage in the United States. It would emerge years later during a time whenever the Spectre was considered out of control, having destroyed the entire nation of Vltava.
Vltava.
President Bill Clinton ordered the spear retrieved and asked Superman to confront the Spectre with it.
Give me that spear.
I did not have sexual relations with that spear.
I did fuck her, but...
As it was widely accepted that the spear was perhaps the only weapon on Earth that could actually harm him, Superman took the spear and headed for Japan, where the Spectre was grappling with a water elemental sent on a rampage by Naya.
He's fucking... He was fighting Godzilla.
The Spectre just over there fighting Godzilla.
He was fighting Godzilla.
Let's see here. The spear was also capable of injuring or slaying the elemental itself. Unfortunately, it was not realized until after the Superman was in the air how deep the taint of the spear was. Superman beheld the vision where he used the spear to take over the world, slaying all of his allies and close friends before being confronted at last by Batman. Superman was able to deny the vision and reject the spear. The Spectre bound the spear inside of a rocky boulder with the ashes of Vltava, and cast it into Earth's orbit.
Jeez, I just fucking floating out there?
Yeah, pretty much. During the Day of Judgment, the rogue angel Asmodel seized control of the vacant Spectre force.
How badass would it have been if that had, like, they had continued that storyline of Superman being tainted by the spear?
Yeah, well, they kind of did with...
There's just, like, one panel where he's, like, on top of, like, maybe, like... he's like outside of a hollowed out White House, sitting in the Oval Office. The spear's on the table. He just like leaned back in the chair, like did like a shadow over his eyes, but his eyes are blood red.
Yeah,
the lasers. Damn.
Where he basically becomes that one movie with the kid that has Superman's powers.
Brightburn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically the same thing. Let's see. During the Day of Judgment, the rogue angel Asmodel seized control of the vacant Spectre force and literally froze over hell. Earth's heroes split.
Real cold today, huh?
Earth's heroes split into three groups. One led by Superman went into hell to reignite the fires. A second, led by Wonder Woman, attempted to retrieve Jim Corrigan from heaven and rebond him to the Spectre.
Imagine being on, like, the fucking A-team. Like, can I go to heaven? I gotta go to hell. You know what I mean? Like, can we draw straws? Or
imagine, because Superman just flying into hell.
Oh, like, you know, by himself, he'd be fine. Where do I gotta go?
I don't need to go with him.
I'd be the quest. I got a couple questions here. Do I have to go to hell?
Yeah. And a third, led by Captain Marvel, ventured into space to retrieve the spear. Captain Marvel was able to withstand the taint long enough to deal a crippling blow to the Spectre, weakening him long enough for Hal Jordan, who was retrieved from Purgatory instead of Corrigan.
I found him.
To become the new host for the Spectre. Once joined, this new Spectre cast a spear back into space. On another occasion, Felix Faust.
He's like, guess who's back?
Back. Then Wonder Woman gets her last.
You can't keep a good man down.
Felix Faust and Cersei both attempted to gain control of the spear in simultaneous yet separate plots. So they both tried to get it at the same time.
Jesus.
Taking advantage of circumstances to seize it with their magics.
That is a good story no one ever sees. Like, two villains having, like, similar plots, and they come into conflict with each other.
Yeah.
So, like, they're not really... Like,
they're not working together,
but like, so they kind of foil each other's plans,
yeah,
without the heroes knowing. So they kind of save the world themselves by fucking with each other.
We need to see a comic like that, though. I'm sure that's been done.
Gotta get Marvel and DC to call me.
Let's see, only to be thwarted by the Justice League and the Justice League Elite, respectively. Recently, the spear fell into the hands of the Dragon King. However, the spear is now thought to be lost thanks to intervention by Wildcat and the Flash, Jay Garrick. So according to, like, with their input, it's lost.
Just randomly, since some old man's attic.
Shut
the fuck off of my damn lawn.
Final Crisis. During the event of Final Crisis, Renee Montoya, the Question.
It's my girl right there.
Continue to...
They can swap birds for me. I'll be Renee Montoya.
The alternate version.
That's the guy.
Continued her personal...
Oh, I did like Rosie Perez as Renee Montoya. But then again, I also had a crush on Rosie Perez because in the Harley Quinn spinoff,
yeah,
with the Birds of Prey,
mm-hmm,
she was Renee Montoya in the movie.
But the movie in general was horrible, so nobody really watched it.
I watched it. I watched it butt ass naked.
Of course, that's the only reason you watched. We know why you watched it. Let's see. She was basically continuing her personal vendetta to hunt down the members of the Religion of Crime, who had sworn to kill her. Yeah. Who had sworn to kill her for denying her role as their leader after accidentally killing their original leader. The member...
Well, who's their chosen disciple, Al Capone? What, I don't understand what is it called? The culture of crime? Or what is it? The cult of crime?
The Religion of Crime.
Religion of Crime. Wow.
Yeah.
Batman's number one enemy. Crime.
It's like their god is crime.
The antichrist to them is fucking Batman.
What was you doing? They're worshiping
the religion. That is so wild. The Religion of Crime.
Yes. The members were looking for the mythical rock which Cain used to kill Abel. Renee tried to fight off the members, although they actually did find the rock. Shortly afterwards, Crispus Allen showed up as the Spectre.
Some random disciple brings a rock. Right, it's Cain's rock. Like, how do you know? Like, he put his name on it. Like, it's a mark, a Sharpie of Cain. But he spelled it wrong, so it's C-A-N-E.
Like raising Cain.
Yeah. I swear this is Cain's rock. Look, he wrote his name on it.
But Crispus Allen showed up as the Spectre and informed her that it is her time to be judged. There was also they were also in possession of the spear, using it as a rock in a ceremony on Vandal Savage.
A rock?
Yeah.
That was
the rock that Cain had used.
Oh, but they said using the spear as a rock or also the rock?
Using it and the rock.
Oh, okay.
Sorry if I misspoke.
No, you got it. I didn't hear it right.
Cain was then reborn in Savage's flesh. He then led an army of followers to Gotham.
Batman, like, son of a bitch.
Where he managed to best the Spectre and plunge the weapon through him. This separated the Spectre itself from the spirit and its host, rendering it a slave to Cain. Cain attempted to corrupt the Radiant.
I'm also a slave to Cain. So raising Cain.
Cain attempted to corrupt the Radiant, God's spirit of mercy, tempting her by offering the deaths of the killers of her human host. When the Radiant refused, he had the Spectre utter the anti-life equation, unmaking creation itself and rebuilding it in the name of Darkseid.
Say 2 + 2 = 5. And it's disintegrates reality.
Or if you're, Terrence, what the fuck is his last name? The fucking crazy guy, black guy that played Iron Man, the character in Iron Man.
Oh, Terrence Howard again?
Yes. If it was him, it's 1 × 1 = 2.
1 × 1 = 2. Everything blew your mind, huh?
However, the Question and Huntress managed to reclaim the spear, though they incurred serious injuries doing it. The Radiant healed Huntress, but cannot heal the Question until the relic is purified of its taint.
That would be like, oh, you heal her, but I'm all fucked up, and you can't do shit for me, huh?
Pretty much.
I gotta be the Question, please, give me a chance.
Something that can only be accomplished by using it to heal a soul rather than destroying it. The Question did this by using the spear to resurrect Jake Allen, the son of the Spectre's human host. This brought hope and peace to the spirit of Crispus Allen, who managed to reclaim control of the Spectre Force. He then used the spear's power to change the world to what it once was, dealing absolute judgment upon Cain and his followers, except for the killers of Sister Clarence. The Radiant's human host, she could forgive them before they died.
Hmm.
So, that's the last of that we've seen of the spear.
Bear?
Yeah.
Probably in the Question's pocket, for all we know.
Maybe.
This isn't his trench coat.
But if you notice, the Spear of Destiny always has a connection with the Spectre.
It's also weird that it's now an evil artifact as opposed to being a good item.
Well, at this point, it is back to a normal good artifact.
Okay.
Like, at least at this point. I'm sure somebody's going to rewrite it to where it changes. But for the moment, it's a good force.
When Satan licked the spear, became evil again.
See, what I got, though, from reading and researching that is that the Spectre can utter the fucking anti-life equation. What Darkseid has been looking for God knows how long.
I just imagine Darkseid, like, in his room one day, like, late at night, it's like 4 a.m, right?
Yeah.
Like, the candles are low because he's been, you know, burning candles at both ends, that whole saying.
Yeah.
And he just fucking the desk is full of fucking paper, just fucking pushes, like, fucking. Like, my life has no meaning. One of those, like, despairing days where you're like, you try to get an idea to work and it never works.
Yeah.
You fucking flip your desk over.
I've had plenty of those where you want to. So I start flipping tables like Jesus.
All right. And his wife comes in. His wife, just a random Ashley. It's like a random white girl. Ashley. It's like, maybe you're okay. Like, no, I'm not okay.
Come back to bed, honey.
I know. I got to find the anti-life equation. You don't understand.
Oh, fuck. All right.
And it's about your father again. Don't you bring up my father.
Did he kill his father?
I don't fucking know.
I'm pretty sure he did.
You know I killed that man.
I ain't killed his brother.
I'm sure it was justified.
They're all evil.
Darkseid's a good man.
He's a good man and hard.
Vote Darkseid 2024.
Alrighty. Basically, for today in our character spotlight, we have the Phantom Stranger. So, publication history for him, the Phantom Stranger first appeared in an eponymous
appeared in a prom.
He appeared in a porn.
First year.
The Phantom Stranger.
It doesn't get no stranger than the Phantom.
No. He first appeared in a 6-issue comic anthology published in 1952 and was created by John Broom and Carmine.
John Broom sounds like a character name.
I know. And Carmine Infantino.
That's a funny character. That's it.
After an appearance in Showcase number 80 in February 1969, he receives another series beginning May through June of 1969 that lasted until February through March of 1976. The Showcase appearance and his first 3 issues of Phantom Stranger consisted of reprints from both the 1950s title and Dr. 13 Ghostbreaker feature from the last 9 issues of the Star Spangled Comics in the same time.
Back then, it must have been like a fucking whole thing when you could like re-get a comic book.
Yeah.
Because like you couldn't just, you know, go out there and just grab like a back issue.
No. Which is like, because him appearing in 1969 and then again in 1976, that's a good, like,
yeah, good time frame. Especially like if you like that one story you really liked And then you like you lost the comic book and you can't find it anywhere.
Yeah.
Like one day you're going through the fucking bin like, oh shit.
He's back?
It's like, oh, he's like the reprints and I've been looking for this story and I lost them.
Yeah. These had Dr. 13, certain that the Phantom Stranger was an imposter, determined to expose him. Beginning with issue number 4, November through December of 1969, the series began featuring all new material with stories produced by Robert Kanigay, Lynn Wayne, Jim Aparo, Neil Adams, Tony DeZuniga, you gotta be careful with that
close one,
and others. In these stories, while the Stranger's past remained a mystery, the writers added a semi-regular cast of characters with him. A demonic sorcerer named Tala would become his archenemy. An alchemist / sorcerer named Tanarak was first an enemy and would later assist him against the Dark Circle. And a blind psychic named Cassandra Kraft would assist him. The stories hinted at a romantic attraction between the Stranger and Kraft, but he eventually left her, deciding she could not be a part of his life, convincing her that he had been killed in their final battle against the Dark Circle.
I can't handle this Strange. I gotta go.
That's all the porn is. He just leaves her.
Just leaves with his hat, a trench coat, butt-ass naked underneath.
She eventually learned differently and turned up occasionally. Dr. 13 dropped along with the reprints, was given a backup series here as of number 12, 1971. Was morphed into The Spawn of Frankenstein in number 23 in 1973. The second volume originally ended and was a 40-issue, with the 41st issue in November of 1975, cover dated March 1976. In January 2010, a 42nd issue was added to the second series during the Blackest Night event, effectively a one-shot.
Ah, the Blackest Night.
So there wasn't anything printed.
Which is between them and
75 and 2010.
God dang.
Yeah. A backup series in the saga of the Swamp Thing, number 1 through 13, featured the Phantom Stranger. Most of these were short stories written by Mike Barr. One was written by Paul Libbets. There were mostly morality tales in the style of the Phantom Stranger number 2, without connections to the character's Bronze Age continuity with Batman or the Justice League. One two-part story explicitly connected with the continuity of Volume 2, continuing the story of Tanarak. After the backup series ended with number 13, the Stranger appeared in the main story of Saga of the Swamp Thing number 14. After Saga of the Swamp Thing became Swamp Thing Volume 2, written by Alan Moore, the Stranger became an occasionally reoccurring character, as Swamp Thing became more involved with the afterlife and the mystical world. So, Volume 3 series for him, the Stranger also starred in a mini-series in 1987. The series portrayed him as an agent of the Lords of Order. They temporarily stripped the Stranger of his powers due to his desire to continue to battle against the Lords of Chaos. This went against the wishes of the Lords of Order, who had believed a victory by the darkness over light was necessary and preordained. This series featured Eclipso as the agent of Chaos. Actions Weekly. So during the period of 1988 through 89, when Action Comics became the anthology Action Comics Weekly, one rotating strip featured the Phantom Stranger. It explicitly continued the continuity of the Phantom Stranger from the Volume 2, so the 70s. The story of Volume 2 in the Action's Weekly strip was resolved in Neil Gaiman's proposed story, concluding the whole of Action Comics. This was published years later.
Neil Gaiman was active that long ago?
I don't know.
Fuck.
In the late 80s.
Jesus.
Yeah. This was published years later as a non-canonical in Green Lantern Superman, Legend of the Green Flame. In this story, the Stranger claims that he belongs to no group, including the servants of the Lords of Order. The Lords of Order threaten to strip him of his powers and he leaves, claiming that he shall continue to wander. We have Volume 4.
These boots were made for walking, and that's what I'm about to do. And he just fucking walks out
and these boots will walk all over you, bitch. In Volume 4, The Phantom Stranger received a new ongoing series in September 2012, written by Dan Didio. Dan Didio. Fucked up all.
Dan old Didio.
And drawn by Brent Anderson. The series was retitled as Trinity of Sin, The Phantom Stranger, as an issue number 9, and canceled as of number 22. Damn. And this happened from August of 2013 to October of 2014. Justice League membership, the Phantom Stranger is better known for his role as a supernatural assistant to other heroes such as the Justice League. His status was either a full, reserve, or honorary member of the Justice League is debatable, though. As a vote of the majority of the team in the Justice League of America number 103, they offered him membership, with Superman declaring that the Stranger, a member without qualification, though he left before accepting. This issue was part of an unofficial metafictional crossover with Marvel Comics, spanning titles from both of the major comics companies. Beginning in Marvel's Amazing Adventures number 16, the story continued in DC's Justice League of America number 103. It was concluded in Thor number 207.
Jesus.
Yeah, so it went between the two.
Yeah.
Each comic featured writers Steve Englehart, Gary Conway, and Lynn Wayne, as well as Wayne's first wife, Glynis, interacting with Marvel or DC characters as the Ruthland Halloween Parade in Ruthland, Vermont. The Phantom Stranger has at least twice asserted his membership status when other leaguers challenged his input, during the vote on the League's readmission of Wonder Woman, and during the crossover with the Avengers.
Pulls out a laminated pass to see that.
I see, bitch, I am.
JLA right there.
Pulls it out like Sheldon Cooper.
And pulls it over his, neck. There you go.
In contrast, many in-story accounts of League membership fail to include the Stranger. When Zatanna was admitted as a member, Superman and Hawkman clarified that the 12-member limit of the Justice League's charter had been rewritten previously to admit Hartgirl as the 13th. Writer Lynn Wayne commented on the Phantom Stranger's relationship with the JLA in 2012 interview, stating that the character only sort of joined. He was offered membership but vanished, as per usual, without actually accepting the offer. Over the years, other writers have just assumed he was a member, but in my world, he never really was.
Damn.
So, in-story lore for him.
Yeah.
As the origin. Unusual for comic book characters of such longevity, nothing in the way of personal data about the Phantom Stranger, like his real name, his true nature, or his origins, have ever been revealed. In 1987, DC produced a special issue in Secret Origins that postulated four possible origins for him. Number one, in a variation of the Wandering Jew story, he is a man named Isaac with a wife, Rebecca, and a young son in Bethlehem during the time of...
Rebecca was the one that turned into salt when she looked back?
I think so, maybe. During the time of Jesus' childhood, when King Herod heard that there was a child born that would become the king of the Jews, he ordered the massacre of the innocents to kill the Christ child. Among the people killed were Isaac's wife and son.
Damn.
Blind with anger, he spent the next 30 years raging against Jesus. During the passion of Jesus, Isaac bribes a guard to let him take place and participate in the flagellation of Christ. Jesus condemns Isaac to tarry in this world until I come again. Centuries after the crucifixion, Isaac repents. He has spent his life helping mankind ever since, evidently finding the task so agreeably fulfilling that, to the present day, he politely declines an offer from God to release him from his penance.
Like for years, like, we good yet, Jesus? Are we good or not? We good yet?
But he likes doing his
what
job.
What about now? We good? But for real, though, are we good or not? I'm exhausted.
I'm tired of walking.
I'm tired, boss. I'm tired.
The number two background that he had. The Stranger was a man in biblical times who was spared God's wrath by an angel. Questioning God's actions, he commits suicide. The angel forbids his spirit from entering the afterlife, reanimates his body, and condemns him to walk the world forever as part of humanity, but also forever separated from it. The angel also erases all of the man's memories from his past life. He then discovers his divine charge to turn humanity away from evil, one soul at a time. Some versions of this story imply that the angel was the incarnation of the specter in that time period.
Hmm.
So basically, the specter is the one that condemned him.
So they're all, well, they give like the Joker type of origin where it's like hundreds of different stories.
Yeah. The number three possibility, the Phantom Stranger is being caught in a time loop. Near the end of the universe, the Phantom Stranger approaches a group of scientists who are trying to transfer energy from the Big Bang to extend the life of the universe. The Phantom Stranger realizes that one of the scientists is a reality of avatar, in reality, an avatar of the anti-life, and that their efforts will prevent the universe from ever existing. The story concludes with Phantom Stranger passing a portion of himself to a scientist who dives through the portal to the Big Bang, intercepts the beam that would have drained the Big Bang, and becomes the Phantom Stranger, completing the cycle.
Okay.
Which is a weird...
Yeah, the weirdest one so far.
And the fourth origin that came up in the story.
Him as Ted Danson. He was the actor, and he became...
the Phantom Stranger was a fallen angel who sided with neither heaven or hell during Lucifer's rebellion and thus condemned to walk the earth.
He's on both now.
Over and over.
Yeah, it's on both sides now.
In the comic book miniseries, The Trenchcoat Brigade, John Constantine sees the fourth origin story as essentially correct. Vertigo Visions, Phantom Stranger number 1, by Alyssa Quitney and Guy Davis, builds upon Alan Moore's Fallen Angel story from Secret Origins and adds a story of a woman called Nama, who was condemned to hell for loving an angel. This angel is strongly hinted to have been the Phantom Stranger. This angel, possible origin was hinted at in The Kingdom Come, The Kingdom, in which it was implied that Jonathan Kent, the future son of Superman and Wonder Woman, might grow up to be the Phantom Stranger.
Jesus.
Which is a weird...
Just throwing all sorts of stuff at us.
Kind of, yeah. They also tied some of his abilities into the Hypertime concept, giving him the innate ability to enter alternate timelines and to exist in spaces between them. The story ultimately revealed this to be a red herring. The character in question has been deliberately drawn in shadows to suggest that he was the Stranger. But whenever Wonder Woman finally saw his face, she said that she now realized that it was not the Stranger they knew.
Oh, you fugly. It was back in the day when, you know, COVID was going around.
Mm-hmm.
They everyone had the mask on, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you started taking the mask on.
It's like, ooh. His appearances and titles featuring Dr. Fate reveal that the Stranger was a servant of the Lords of Order during the Ninth Age of Magic, at least. This may be a later development unrelated to his actual origin, though. And Phantom Stranger number 0 from 2012. The Phantom Stranger is Judas Iscariot.
That's the one that I was telling you about, wasn't it?
Yeah. He is judged by the Circle of Eternity, who also are implied to be proxies for a higher power. The Stranger is condemned to walk the earth forever as an agent of God. He wears a necklace made of the 30 pieces of silver, which he took as payment for betraying Jesus.
So he's just walking with bling.
Yeah. When the Stranger facilitates the transformation of Jim Corrigan into the Spectre, one of the coins falls from the necklace and crumbles, bringing him one step closer to redemption.
Damn, that's years later.
Yeah.
He's got 29 to go. Oh, God dang.
And that's what I was talking about when we were talking about the Spectre, how he fucked up the Spectre's life, basically.
Jesus, that was one fucking coin?
Yeah. One coin.
What the fuck's he got to do? Jesus Christ.
In his earliest appearances, the Phantom Stranger would prove supernatural events to be hoaxes perpetrated by criminals. He would directly confront the villains and displayed no supernatural abilities apart from perhaps his uncanny ability to appear where and when he was needed and to disappear just as mysteriously.
Wait, which version is this?
This is one of the original versions. Like,
so he's just a regular guy?
Is what he, like, at least that's what he was portrayed as.
Hmm.
With nobody seeing him coming or going. In later stories, his supernatural events were real and the Phantom Stranger was given unspecified supernatural powers of his own to defeat them. For example, he was able to control a smoke-based sedative with a gesture, claiming that smoke itself is an ally.
Look at this ganja right here. I got that sticky, icky. He just sells weed on the side.
Chloroform smoke? In his second comic book series, the Phantom Stranger became a truly supernatural hero. The Phantom Stranger played a major part in Neil Gaiman's The Books of Magic, taking protagonist Tim Hunter through time to show him the history and nature of magic. He has assisted the Justice League on numerous occasions, even being formally elected to the group, although he did not acknowledge his membership until Justice League number 143. The Stranger also had his own limited series.
Yeah, well, he needed like dental work, so that's when now he's a member all of a sudden, like, it's used to benefit.
He needed a little benefit.
Went to the dentist office. He's like, I'm a JLA member, so, you know, all my dental work is free.
You know, Bruce pays for it.
I mean, Batman. That's how he just drops it randomly. Bruce Wayne, Batman?
Oh, never mind. Mine wiped.
Instead of mind wiping, he burns the whole place down.
And then you see his smoke that he controlled. The Stranger also had his own limited series where, lacking much of his power, he tries to foil Eclipso's plan to cause a nuclear war. During Kevin Smith's relaunch of The Green Arrow,
Kevin Smith,
he prevented Hal Jordan from uniting with his resurrected body of Oliver Queen with his soul in heaven. This earned him Jordan's wrath indeed. The specter threatened to judge the stranger to see whether God had punished him properly for refusing him access to heaven itself.
What's the word? Double jeopardy. You can't punish me twice for the same crime.
Nonetheless, the phantom stranger assisted Hal Jordan during his tenure as a specter on numerous occasions as well, most notably in a short stint babysitting Hal's niece, Helen.
One of the coin drops, finally.
By taking care of a kid.
You don't understand how fucking brutal this kid was. So fucking crayon marks all over his fucking jacket and shit. Fucking vomit on his fucking shoes.
Hats all in tatters.
Fucking silly putty in his fucking coat pocket. Like, God dang it.
This little bitch. Fuck them kid.
I mean, this lovely child.
He says, fuck them kids, and he gets coin back. In 2005's Day of Vengeance, God, I forgot that it was 2005.
Day of Vengeance, yeah.
The phantom stranger had been turned into a mouse by the specter. Yeah. Upon the specter's confrontation and battle with the stranger states, you can't kill me. I doubt that the universe would allow it. He was still able to advise Detective Chimp, however, who sheltered him in his hat while he regained his powers.
Oh, yeah, he was with him the whole fucking time. Yep. I forgot about that.
He changed back using recovered energies in Day of Vengeance number 6 and aided the Shadow Pact, allowing them to see the battle between the Spectre and Shazam.
And my boys, the Shadow Pact.
Yep.
I ended up buying the first issue and I'd lost it.
Oh, did you?
Yeah. I had issue one of the Shadow Pact.
The series makes a point that the supernatural community generally regards the Phantom Stranger as invincible. The first reaction to some characters seeing that the Spectre's assault on magic is simply to presume that the Stranger will take care of it. Other stories have shown the Stranger to be nearly as powerful as the Spectre, which in Day of Vengeance, kind of, but like he couldn't beat him, but and the Spectre couldn't kill him, so.
Like, see, we're at an impasse, I see.
In Day of Vengeance, Infinite Crisis Special number 1, the Phantom Stranger works with Naboo, Dr. Occult, Zatanna, the Shadow Pact, and other mystics to reform the Rock of Eternity and help defeat the Maddened Spectre. The Phantom Stranger's relationships with the other mystics' heroes are usually a bit tense. The Stranger has no qualms gathering various forces to combat a certain evil, often invading those people's personal lives. However, he does not usually extend them the same courtesy. The Phantom Stranger has resisted such people as Dr. Fate, although Dr. Fate is, in almost any incarnation, an ally of the Stranger. Despite this, he does get along well with Zatanna. In Justice League,
he does.
Strange danger. In Justice League of America number 6, he appeared by her side to help her remove the influence of Faust.
Guess who's back? You can't put a good man down.
He just fucking every turn.
Always comes back. Always fucking. Like, he's always, at least he's a trier. He's not a quitter.
Obviously, he tried a lot. His influence, though, on the Red Tornado and in the Justice series, he seems to have a fatherly affection for her, calling her my dear.
My boo.
My boo. Since he is ultimately an unpredictable force, others often meet the Phantom Stranger's appearance with distrust. Nonetheless, most heroes will follow him, seeing not only his immense power, but also knowing that the Stranger is, in the end, a force for good. Now, he has generally shown to side with humanity first in many supernatural-based problems, such as whenever he aided Superman in a confrontation with the magician Arion, who attempted to force Superman to retire in the belief that Superman and other alien heroes would hold back the darkness that would make civilization. Arion describing human history and existence in a cycle that would allow humanity to develop to a certain point before they collapsed and have to start again. For so long that it would destroy humanity whenever it came. Although the Stranger acknowledged that the future Arion had foreseen, where Earth was completely destroyed by the mysterious and powerful Kyber due to Superman delaying him for so long that he only struck at his peak, was possible, he also told Superman to keep fighting to find another way as the cost in souls and experience if Arion succeeded was too great. A notable exception to the heroes who will work with the Stranger is Madame Xanadu, who has refused to join the Stranger on a few occasions. Although she is a member of the Sentinels of Magic, Eventually, it is revealed that Madame Xanadu's hatred for the Phantom Stranger stems from his involvement in the events costing young Nemu her powers and heritage, and turning the young Fae into the immortal yet powerless clairvoyant. So it's because of the Phantom Stranger is fucking everybody's lives, though. He makes Jim Corrigan die.
Where is he, Constantine?
The Stranger also holds a unique relationship with the Spectre, as the two forces often come into conflict. He was responsible for gathering a group of mystic heroes to combat the Spectre whenever he lost his human host, Jim Corrigan, seemingly losing control of the Spectre. The Phantom Stranger participated in Jim Corrigan's funeral whenever Corrigan's soul finally earned its rest and left the Spectre. The Stranger subsequently became one of the forces that stood against the Spectre whenever he went on the rampage without a human host, until the soul of Hal Jordan bonded with it. The Stranger occasionally took on an adversary role to the Spectre. In Infinite Crisis number 6, aware that the Spectre has yet another new host, the Phantom Stranger gathered a large group of magic wielders in an unsuccessful attempt to solicit the Spectre's assistance in the crisis.
Jeez, a lot of S's in that one.
It's like whenever I was saying it, it's like, fuck. If I start just going...
Your whole pressure just stretched to sweat.
It's like just need water after all that. But a lot of S's. In the Madame Xanadu series, the first encounter between the then young and innocent Nemu, as Xanadu was known in the Arthurian age, the Phantom Stranger himself is told. There, Nemu acknowledges his unearthly nature, describing him as ageless and yet so uneasy, and claiming, "You're not human, nor are you of the ancient folk, nor fey creature, nor demon." Before Nemu was able
to... This whole time, he just turned out he was a Martian. Like Martian Manhunter. Is it surprise?
Just shape-shifting.
I'm his brother.
My name's John Jones Jones.
My name's Jimmy Jones. I'm his brother.
Before Nemu was able to grasp his nature, the Stranger goes away, claiming to be compelled by counsel and yet forbidden to interfere in the course of history.
And the one of those guys, the guy that always has the answer after the accidents happened.
Kind of.
What they should have done is they should have fire exits outside the building. That way they wouldn't all burn inside. He just fucking disappears.
In the pages of Shadow Pact, the Phantom Stranger has adopted the role of narrator. He is shown to be aware of the mystical happenings, not only to Earth, but across several dimensions. Once again, he is shown to be unable to interfere, no matter how dire the danger is that he's watching.
He's just watching the guy drown, like, I can't interfere. Just reach your hand out.
Basically, he plays a lot of the role as Uatu. He's almost
a watcher.
Yeah, he's almost like that.
So I can't help you. And he's just drowning in his own pool.
But he doesn't seem to have the same liabilities that Uatu has in Marvel. So he can interfere, even though he says he can't.
Maybe he's just lazy.
I think that might be what it is. In Blackest Night, Blackhand refers to the Phantom Stranger as neither dead nor alive, meaning he cannot be killed, resurrected, or raised as a Black Lantern. The Stranger watches as a Black Lantern ring attaches itself to Crispus Allen's body, turning him into a Black Lantern and sealing the Spectre within him. In the tie-in one-shot revival of Phantom Stranger number 42, the Stranger, with the help of Blue Devil, attempts to fight the Black Lantern Spectre, but fails. The two then travel to Nanda Parbat, where the Stranger helps Deadman remove the Black Ring from his body. The Stranger has the body brought into Nanda Parbat and placed under guard, stating that it is of singular importance. In the New 52, Special Edition 1 as part of the New 52 reboot, the Phantom Stranger was implied to be Judas Iscariot and part of the Trinity of Sin with Pandora and the Question.
Those are all allegations and lies?
Well, not named explicitly, the necklace he wears is presumed to be made of the 30 pieces of silver he received from the betrayal of Jesus Christ. His hair and eyes became totally white from the experience. Phantom Stranger number 0 confirmed that Phantom Stranger was once known as Judas Iscariot, the man who betrayed Jesus. In his origin tale, he is about to hang himself whenever, with a suicide attempt, is stopped by a mysterious group of individuals. He is subsequently judged along with Pandora of Pandora's Box fame and another man who was turned into the Question.
Narcissus or whatever the fuck he was.
Mm-hmm. Thousands of years later, he is guided to help desperate former detective Jim Corrigan find his kidnapped girlfriend. He leads him to the abandoned warehouse where she has been kept, but this turns out to be a trap. Corrigan is killed by the kidnappers, then transformed into the Spectre and accuses the Stranger of betraying him.
That one, he was fucking dumped in a barrel and was a man dumped in a fucking pool or some shit. We said it.
Yep.
Like, we said it was. We said it, they said it was like in a water, but we said it was a pool somewhere.
Just a pool.
Just someone's pool.
A pond. As the Spectre is about to attack the Stranger, a mysterious voice sends him off to inflict his wrath on the more deserving. As payment for what occurred with Corrigan, one coin drops off of his necklace that he was cursed with.
Like, done and done.
And the Stranger realizes he has more encounters ahead of him before he is forgiven.
Yeah, like fucking 1,000 of them, it looks like. If it takes that grand of
turning Jim Corrigan into the Spectre.
That's such a grand gesture for him to just fucking lose a coin. That's insane.
Yeah. Pandora meets the Phantom Stranger and tells him that she needs his help to find the person who can open her box. He refuses.
He's like, oh, I bet. That's the first line to a porno.
Open my box open.
It's like, all right, but I got to tell you, they don't call me the Stranger for no reason.
And you won't remember what happened. And then he gets his gas. And
the room just fucking lights up with like a disco ball comes out of the fucking ceiling. Girl, when I went and won't. I can't have had a hella. I don't know the words of the song, but you know what the song I'm talking about.
He refuses, reminding her of the last time her box was open. When the sins of the world were open.
Girl, you a freak. I got time for that madness again.
They're all just simps.
He's like, no, girl, not again.
That's the box.
My day just barely healed itself.
I lost 1 point. I don't even releasing all that sin into this world.
Use those coins as a fucking anal beads.
Shit, wait. Oh, fuck. To this, she responds that she only wants to save everyone from what she had unleashed. John Constantine tries to con the Phantom Stranger to join the Justice League Dark by promising to return one of the silver coins bound to him through his punishment.
Will you get my coin back?
He'll make the coin come back.
That's fucked up, Johnstantine. That's what the Phantom Stranger calls him.
The Phantom Stranger rejects the offer, but Constantine feels he will eventually come around to be on the Justice League Dark side. The question manipulates Dr. 13 to impale the Phantom Stranger with the Spear of Destiny. The Phantom Stranger is left on the door of the House of Mystery, and the Justice League Dark attempt to revive him, summoning the Nightmare Nurse.
Jesus.
Once they do revive him, the Phantom Stranger states that they are all in his debt and asks the Justice League Dark, specifically Zatanna, to help him enter Hell and save his family. Zariel warns the Phantom Stranger that he is never allowed to enter Heaven again, having gone to Hell to try to save his family. Zariel also states to the Phantom Stranger that if he tries, he will be erased from time and history forever.
He's like, you promise?
Just be gone completely.
Yeah, basically. That's what he's looking for.
So, basically, the powers and abilities of the Phantom Stranger. The natures of these are mysterious as the Stranger himself, who seems to be effectively immortal, never aging, which I don't know why during, you know, like, research that, you know, you have to use both of those. But
he doesn't age yet, he's immortal. What if he just kept getting older forever, but he never died?
Oh, that one sucks. That one sucks so bad.
I used to be a young man like you in a wheelchair.
Professor X style?
Good Lord. That wouldn't be fucked up. Because, okay, so yeah, he can't age, great. But right. if you were a vampire, right?
And you just kept getting older.
Older.
No, it sucked. Eventually, just like crepit old
fucking skeleton.
The Phantom Stranger has demonstrated enormous powers and capabilities, the exact origin of which are undetermined. He can travel enormous distances in a very short time, such as the JLA Watchtower and Apocalypse, as well as to mystical dimensions such as Heaven, Hell, and the realm occupied by the Quintessence, which is basically right before Heaven, because he can't get into actual
waiting room.
Right.
Number 17.
He can fire energy bolts of great force, travel through time, dispel magic, reveal illusions, and
specifically feel magic.
Everything. Wonder Woman fucks it up. And
Phantom Stranger messes with his spells.
I think everybody we've talked about in this podcast that it fucks it up. Naboo, Dr. Fate.
Damn, I can't catch a break around here.
And survive in space without any type of life support system. On one occasion, he created a mystical shield that protected Superman from any spells cast against him directly in preparation for Superman's upcoming confrontation with Arion. The limits of his power have not been defined. In many cases, despite his obvious capabilities, he claims he is not allowed to end a crisis directly, only to guide others to take the necessary actions. The Phantom Stranger's greatest and most well-known power is his mysterious omniscience. He seems to know nearly everything about any character and situation he encounters in the DC Universe. And with the JLA Avengers crossover, this extends to the Marvel Universe as well.
Jesus.
Which is...
Hey, Peter Parker, what the fuck?
So that means he knows more than Uatu, and Uatu watches everything.
That freak watches everything.
With a bit, like his bulbous. However, this is disproved in Swamp Thing Annual number two. This allows him to provide helpful advice and assistance to others. He claims that nothing remains hidden from him. His stranger just peeking through your window. His knowledge has even allowed him to come to the aid of the DC Universe characters trapped out of their own times. And Animal Man number 19. Animal Man had found himself trapped in the 1960s in a ghost-like state in between reality and non-reality.
Yeesh.
He wandered listlessly until the stranger met him and offered a helping hand. The stranger was already aware of Animal Man's current situation and even knew that he was from the future. In Swamp Thing number 2, Annual number 2, the stranger was not completely aware of all the details of Alex Holland's transformation into the Swamp Thing, though he knew enough to be aware of the swamp creature's existence in life, but was still surprised whenever he encountered the shade of Alex Holland in heaven, as he had assumed the creature and Holland were one and the same.
Hmm.
But apparently they're not.
So he's almost omnipotent.
But just not completely.
Yeah.
The Phantom Stranger is one of the few true immortals in the DC Universe actually incapable of being killed. When attacked by the Spectre in the Day of Vengeance story, the Stranger expressed doubt that even the Spectre could kill him, mysteriously adding, "I doubt the universe would allow it." The Spectre resorted to transforming this Stranger into a harmless mouse. After killing the Phantom Stranger was indeed beyond the Spectre's power. Like, the only one that'd be able to kill the Phantom Stranger is God, basically. Mm. Although the Phantom Stranger does not wear a mask, the shadow of his fedora almost constantly cloaks his eyes.
I always imagine him with like the blue mask over his eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just me in my head?
It's just you in your head.
Hmm.
He never has worn a mask.
Damn.
But
it looks like it.
The perception is, yeah. It actually is true. Which, when shown unhatted in the Madame Xanadu miniseries, set in the Arthurian age where the stranger disguised as a simple cloak, his eyes appear completely white, devoid of irises and pupils, and sunk in a gaunt, sad visage. So,
weird.
Like, you still never get any true details out of it. But, yep, that is Phantom Stranger.
Man, he's living quite the life.
Yeah.
Neither living nor dead.
And now we know that Pandora wanted him in her box.
Open my box, Phantom Stranger. Come on, baby.
I ain't let that sit into this shit. That's bad. We don't want that sitting there.
Some bad juju right there.
Last time it happened, you created everything bad. You taught these people what they shouldn't have known. All righty, ready for some Reddit?
Yes, sir.
Let's end this on some hopefully decent ones. First one is by Boffy Bisted. This person puts, yesterday was a normal day, and as usual, my 14-year-old son was having his post-school screen time. He's a good kid, so I don't hover too much. I went to check on him and noticed he quickly minimized whatever he was watching.
The hell you look at that boy?
He said it was just a gaming stream, and I let it slide, but something felt off. A bit later, I went back to offer him a drink and caught a glimpse of his screen before he could close it. He was watching one of those hot tub streams, Amaranth.
Oh, Amaranth, yeah.
For those who don't know.
I do, because I'm a pervert.
It's basically a streamer in swimwear sitting in hot tubs, chatting with viewers. It's not explicit, but definitely more on the suggestive side. I agree with that. I tried to handle it calmly and asked him why he was watching it. He got embarrassed and mumbled about being popular. It being popular.
I gotta get on, girl.
I explained that while these streams aren't outright bad, they're not exactly suitable for his age.
How old is he, 6?
14.
It's not bad. It's probably, well, let that boy, you know, blossom into his perverted self.
Let him turn into the next Noé.
Let him goon.
I told him that he needs to be careful about what he watches online. He seemed pretty embarrassed, and I left him to think it over. He just pulled that shit right back.
Probably.
Now I'm second-guessing myself. Should I have been stricter? Should I trust him to make better choices? I'm also thinking about whether I need to set more restrictions on his internet use. I mean, he's going to find it.
Of course, he can find anything now on the internet.
Pretty much. And it's not going to get any better. Like, he's going to go down that rabbit hole and then come back to reality eventually. Like, no way, dude. He looked at everything, and now it's all the normal stuff. He went so far down the rabbit
hole. Went so far down the rabbit hole, it burnt my fucking... He gave me 9 omnipotence. 9 omnipotence of all sexual matters. I can see the past, present, and future of sex.
Like, talk to your man, Adam's dick. So, yeah. He's going to...
So, I've seen it all.
You've seen it all, and now you went back to plain bread.
And now I've seen everything, so now, so that's why my stuff is so boring now. I learned what I like.
And it ain't that dark deep.
Not really. some new yoga. Like, I can watch that shit for 3 hours straight. A woman do some naked yoga. I'm very boring in my actual... you'll see something like out of curiosity, but like the stuff you really want to, you know, what's the tactful word for it? Jack off to is more like boringly tame for the normal people now want to see some weird shit, like people fucking pumpkins or step parents shit.
You don't want the stepsister shit?
No. A simple man.
Alrighty. Next one is by J2Ho.
J2Ho.
This person puts, this is not satire. I wish it was. Let me start with that. My partner is staying at my house for the week while my parents are away. We're doing the typical boyfriend-girlfriend stuff. You know, sleeping together, sex, cuddling, kissing, showering together, etc. My boyfriend takes significantly longer showers than I do. He spends about 20 minutes and an hour.
Probably just washing his asshole.
He spends 20 minutes to an hour, basically.
That's a long time. Damn, that's a long fucking time.
I typically spend 10 to 15 minutes.
Exactly. Like, just clean yourself up and go.
20 minutes is still quite a bit, though.
20 minutes, yeah. Like, anything
that's
past...
a long shower.
Like, yeah, like 13 max.
I can see, like...
Unless, I can see 20 minutes if, like, you've had a long day.
You're just standing there?
Yeah, just like, oh, I let the water just fucking, wipe the sin away.
But generally...
Wash the sin away.
Generally, though, 20 minutes is a long time.
That is, too. But then the hour is the longest.
Shit. The water had been cold by that point.
Yeah.
We had a shower a few days ago, and I left to get dried, giving him some alone time. He likes to spend some time by himself to meditate. Little did I know, this meditation of the day was merely time for him to plot.
To plot?
Once I heard the water go off, I went to give him a towel. I took it by accident and admired his naked body inside of the hazy mist. Naturally, I got curious. While he was air drying, waiting for me to hand him a towel, I went up to him and played with a ding-a-ling.
You know, if you gotta say it like that, you should not be doing anything with anybody.
I was just hitting it off my hand while he was drying his hair.
Okay, smacking the shit out of it.
It was limp, so it was hitting off of my hand quite easily, and it felt good against my palm. You know those door stoppers that people play with. That was the way I was hitting it.
Jesus, girl,
back and forth, up and down, not sexually, just curious about the male body as an assigned female at birth. At one point, he told me squeeze and pull. Though this was the beginning of some, thinking that this was beginning of some sort of shower sex, I did. This was a mistake. After my gentle grip then wrapped around his pee-pee, and I tugged it a little.
Jesus.
I heard him rip the fattest, juiciest, earth-breaking fart I have ever heard in my whole life.
So that's his trigger point? You pull on his dick and he farts?
His little trick was the equivalent of the pull my finger trick.
Yeah, that's what I just assumed.
With a bit more spice. He was laughing his head off while I retracted myself in disgust. I left the bathroom raging at his stupid prank while the smell of the fart lingered behind
me. Fucking curtain behind him just fucking smeared with shit. Would have just shut up.
Liquid shit.
Yeah, basically.
That's how she ends the story.
I don't blame her.
Next one is by Anxious Donut 563. This person puts. It said that they had to put the 563. That means there was 562 other Anxious Donuts. I work as a server in a small restaurant, and I'm pretty sure everyone knows that whenever a customer doesn't finish their meal or ask for it to be boxed up, we obviously throw it away. But for the past few weeks or so, instead of throwing the food away after my customers are done with their meal, I have been eating the leftover remains on their plates.
Damn, what? You're starving.
I read that and it's like, oh my God.
Ugh. I can already tell something weird happened. Like, they found some, like, fucking cigarette butt or something off.
We are not allowed to do this, so I just quickly scarfed it down whenever I returned the place to the back, whenever no one was looking. I was going okay until I suddenly got sick. Turned out I had hepatitis A.
Jesus Christ.
It's been awful. I couldn't hold down food for days, not to mention that I've been looking like a minion for a week now.
Hepatitis A.
I had no choice but to report it at work and also decided that it was a good idea to come clean about how I probably got it, which almost got me fired. I'm lucky that I got away with only a warning, but I also can't work for the next 2 weeks. I guess it's the consequences of my own actions. At least I still have a job.
Yeah. And hepatitis A.
Don't eat off of other people's fucking plate, you nasty bitch. I just thought they're just licking the plates whenever they're taking them back.
I just imagine, yeah, like they're coming up that they're coming down the walkway to the kitchen, licking the plates clean.
Like, you nasty motherfucker! Like you're playing the role of a dog. Like
basically eating the scraps after that. But man, they don't get hepatitis. Get A.
I know. You don't get that even from a dog.
Jesus Christ! What the fuck? What person was that? What disease did this other person have? That just gave him hepatitis A.
It was like Keith Richards has every disease known to man. All right, next one is by Yogingo. Not Yogringo, but Yogingo. This person put, I work as a customer service representative. As a telephone operator, as well as handling email inquiries, I used to work in the office, but ever since the pandemic, I solely work from home now. The amount of inquiries, aka job, I have to handle really depends on amount of customers using my company's services and how the system is holding up. Today was a very boring day. Barely anybody was needing our help, and the number of inquiries was scarce. So I thought it wouldn't be a bad idea to take a short nap, maybe about 30 minutes. I placed AutoClick Grid on a communication tool and used the notifications on, turned the notifications on and bumped up the volume so that whenever I received a loud ringing, I would wake up. It would wake me up for sure. Turned out it was a bad idea. Whenever I woke up about after 30 minutes, I got two messages from my boss asking me what the hell I'm doing. While I was asleep, I did not miss any calls because there was none. However, I slept on messages from my colleagues asking me about other email-based inquiries. I answered their questions immediately and finished my job, leaving no inquiries unanswered by the time shift is over. However, my boss is still suspicious saying I haven't been able to focus on the job. And I was away for more than an hour, which is not the case, but it is true that I was sleeping on the job.
Mm.
The boss says that I still need to explain myself and what I was doing for an hour next morning.
I was taking a shit.
I guess I have to spill my guts and say, good old, I swear that this will never happen again. We all know that's a fucking lie. Next day, just passing out again.
Fucking dead asleep in the back of your house.
Exactly. Next one is by Kitchen Opening 4005. This person puts, today I was walking my wonderful miniature dachshunds whenever I reached a field. Sorry. He just turned 2 and he's full of energy. So I thought he could run around a bit. He was having a blast sniffing things and playing chase with me. It wasn't too hot, the clouds covering the blasting rays of the sun. My dog was dashing like a headless chicken. Energy I won't have to entertain later. Life was good.
Interesting fucking word choice, a headless chicken. So random. I don't know why I thought that was weird to me.
Yeah. We walked a little bit, and he was going ahead. He's the parade leader. Once in a while, he'd stop and lag to inspect something. But I called him back each time. To which he paddled fast ahead again. He trapsed. What the fuck is trapsed?
Probably traipsed.
Traipsed?
Yeah.
Yeah. He traipsed and traipsed. Tail wagging.
Traipsed and traipsed. That doesn't sound at all. Yeah. Well, traipsing is like just, you know, frolicking, so.
Traipsed and traipsed, so frolicked and frolicked.
I guess that's what they're trying to say. I don't know.
It's a word I haven't used very often, so, you know. he was behind again, and I called him. His little face almost looked like it was smiling as he ran to my feet. I grabbed his face behind his ears and gave him a big smooch on his cheek. Instantly, I knew something was wrong. Oh, so terribly wrong. Some sort of horrible texture covered my lips. Under my nose as well. My eyes darted to his cheek. Brown smudge covered his red fur.
Did he do the thing that my dog used to do? Was fucking lather themselves in some other dog's shit?
Right, right. Yes. I held my breath, for I knew what was to come. Alas, I was never the best in gym and couldn't hold my breath for long. Inhale. A lovely layer of putrid feces-covered air violated my airways. Felt it crawl deep inside so much so that my very soul ached. I looked at my dog. He looked at me, unknowing of what he had just done. I spat on the ground and took notice of the long walk around the lake back to my home. Gotta walk all the way back. Don't kiss the dog. You're going to get sick, my mom always told me.
Well.
I raced my dog back home, covering my face from watchful neighbors.
Just a fucking face full of shit.
I washed my face 5 times with dish soap and rinsed my mouth out with it, too. Dog was next. I will always look before I kiss him now.
Yeah, I don't know why dogs do that.
I'm so glad that mine never did. So glad. All right, next one is by Worldliness Quiet. It's a weird word.
That hurt me.
Worldliness. This happened yesterday. This happened yesterday by, I guess it's supposed to be, but I'm feeling the effects today. Let me preface by saying I don't really do weed.
Let me preface.
The only reason I had these gummies is that my cousin had left them here after visiting from out of state. After mostly having forgotten about these gummies, I found them last week and decided to take one. I chewed it up and swallowed it immediately.
Let's go!
The effects were gradual and very mild at first. I don't know why you put mildly. Yesterday, I had routine cleaning at my dentist. I haven't been flossing as regularly as I should, but let's just say...
I don't floss at all.
Let's just say my gums were a bloody mess afterwards. Anyway,
wait, what fucking dentist? I've been to the dentist when they fly, like, for my, like, 6 months checkup.
Yeah.
Like, they never fucked up my teeth that I'm bleeding. What the fuck kind of flossy are they doing to you? Jesus.
Anyways, I decided I was going to have a chill afternoon and take a gummy. However, this time without thinking about it, I just sucked on it and let it dissolve in my mouth. The effects came on strong and fast. I was too high to function. I was basically melting into my couch the entire afternoon until I went to bed. This morning, I wake up and I'm still feeling high, although it is much milder now. Even so, I still have to call off work. No way I was going to be able to function well at work today.
Hey, man, I can't come in, man.
Yeah.
I'm fucking tripping balls, man.
Yeah? All right, next one is by Rabbit Stoat. It's Person Pitts. I bought myself some shrimp at a seafood counter. And that night, made a nice teriyaki stir fry with some veggies and rice. Since I made a few servings but live alone, I put the leftovers in the fridge for the next day. That night, I felt a little stomach sick. It was just a mild nauseous feeling, no vomiting or diarrhea. So, it was uncomfortable, but not a huge deal. Only, I wasn't sure if it was the shrimp dish I ate, or something I ate earlier in the day. Or just some stomach bug, or just my digestive system being fussy, as it is sometimes for no good reason. But the scientific method sort, being the scientifically minded sort, I decided it was best to investigate. I had posted on social media about the meal and feeling slightly sick and how I was going to eat the leftovers, and my friends told me that I was dumb and that I should just throw them away just to be safe.
The dumbest son of a bitch ever lived.
Obviously, these were not scientifically minded friends. Where would civilization be if no one had the curiosity to pursue scientific investigation?
Yeah, by the way, scientists do experiments on other things, other people.
Not yourself.
Not on your, yeah.
So, yeah, it was the shrimp dish. I was the sickest I had been after eating those leftovers, out of both ends, with crippling stomach cramps. I was supposed to fly out to Key West for the weekend, too, and had to cancel.
Great choice.
I lost out on one night's hotel cost for the cancellation, but got the rest refunded. The flight credit for the flight I had to cancel. I spent the entire weekend miserable and only barely recovered from Monday work. Now, I did have one last serving of the shrimp in the fridge. Less curious.
Let's make sure this was the actual thing that got me sick. Let's try it again.
A less curious person would assume if you got sick twice after eating the same dish, there was something wrong with the dish and that you should definitely not eat it. I, being a more curious person, knew that you couldn't rule out coincidence.
And the dumbest motherfucker ever lived.
With 100% certainty, and to be better verify that the shrimp was the culprit, I should try it again.
Wow, fucking genius.
However, my less curious friends, who heard of my plans, insisted that I was an idiot and that eating four-day-old shrimp that was most likely food poisoned me twice already was beyond moronic. I reluctantly caved and threw it away, thus setting scientific progress back years, probably.
He goes into the trash and you can just hear it sizzling in there.
Next one is by Closeted.
Closeted?
Closeted.
Well.
This person puts, this is a super embarrassing, and I seriously hope none of you make the mistake I made last night. I've loved psychedelics for years. I've had my ups and downs during experiences, but I've always managed to keep my mental state together enough to differentiate between real issues and perceived ones. Last night, I attended a show. Nothing I'd planned in advance, but a group I've always enjoyed. Nonetheless, I got some of them boomers off a friend last night and ate a slice.
Boomers, holy shit, I heard of that. Boomers, my guy.
I don't either. I don't do drugs, so I don't know.
Damn.
Off of a friend last night, ate a slice on the ride up there.
Ate a slice? What the? I thought it was a pill.
Within about half an hour, I started having very strange physical symptoms, tingling extremities, chest pain, not your typical mushroom sensations.
Oh, they're shrooms. Okay.
I sat myself down and tried to collect myself. After all, I'd taken these booms before. I wonder if he's meaning shrooms.
I don't know. That's like a slight.
And it's auto-correcting to booms.
I don't know. I just assume it's a slang term for shrooms, like boomers.
Could be.
Yeah, because he started with boomers, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it probably just...
One of their words for it. Boomers. I'm not a drug addict, so I don't know.
I only indulge in the drug that is sex.
From Pandora. Release the sins. Thinking you're going to die on high-dose psychedelics isn't a common thing, but it isn't all that uncommon either. I didn't think it would ever happen to me. If I'm dosed that heavily, usually texting is out of the question. I have very little recollection of this occurring, but I texted everyone, mother, sister, best friends, ex-best friends, who I wanted to make up with, that I was going to die 100%.
Wow, good tonight. Job.
I texted ex-girlfriends, who I never really think about anymore, wonderfully abstract poetry saying goodnight and goodbye, essentially. I'm not all sure why I had these symptoms that I had, but apparently they didn't manifest any further. I didn't come back to myself enough to realize what I had done until the car ride back. Now self-pity and embarrassment beyond anything I know. The only good thing I see coming from this actually ended up saying some things to people that I only think I would have said had I honestly thought about it in my last sentence to them. Friends, and I guess there's something that I had to say about that.
He doesn't say like what they said back. Yeah.
No. No.
The worst is like no one responded at all. It's like, no, oh, <they're>... fuck.
I got no responses. Next one is by Lubrofit. This person puts, I've been moving and there's some random things in my car and I live in Texas. Most of the things in my car won't melt. Clothes, bath mats, towels, etc. But moving takes up a lot of space, and there's small things that I missed. I guess the toilet bowl cleaner, fresh under the sink, wrapped in plastic, was left on the passenger seat, as I was intending to bring it immediately. Bring it in immediately. You know those cleaners that hang on the side of the bowl with the metal hanger like aluminum? Mm-hmm. Well, whenever I grabbed my bag from the passenger seat, I got caught on the hanger of the chemical toilet seat cleaner wrapped in plastic at the bottom. It was burning inside of my car all day. Whenever I got to my car to drive home, my butt started burning. I checked that it wasn't the seatbelt and kept sitting on it and kept sitting in it while it drenched through my pants and kept burning my butt. I thought the seat was too hot and would cool down quickly. Whenever I finally got up to check, the chemicals were splashed around the inside of the plastic and had put, Whenever I finally got up to check, the chemicals were splashing around inside the plastic, and I had to put my shirt in my pants to hold off until I could drive to the Quick Trip bathroom. I still couldn't let my butt touch the seat even while the shirt blocking my butt. Here I am washing the chemicals off my burning red behind. What the? He sat in chemicals?
I guess that's what he's saying. Well, how did it end up from the passenger seat to the driver's side?
Don't know. I don't understand. Like, I know I'm, like, more tired. I know I'm confused sometimes, or I fuck up whenever I'm reading, but it's like, what? Damn. And last one for today. Push my limit is the person that put this in here. This person puts. So, technically last night, but still. Me and the missus decided to get down and do the dirty. Everything was going great. New positions, newer sensations, taking our time with it. All in all, fantastic. Then, as she so wants to do, she whispered, "Doggy," to my ear. I love doggy position, so did not hesitate in the slightest.
Let me ruin the mood by going,
flipping her over and just rushing straight in. Mistake number one was going too fast. Mistake number two was not making sure I was going in correctly. Number three.
Oh, did you insert the asshole?
Was not using enough lube.
Or did he hit the fucking wall?
As I went in, I felt a god-awful snap and was immediately bent over, doubled in pain.
He broke his dick?
I pulled out, and what I saw, I had snapped my frenulum. And by snapped, I mean completely snapped.
Jeez.
Not a tear or a cut, completely snapped in two. Blood was going everywhere. I immediately threw up and started crying.
The only fucking response that you... I mean, that's the only reasonable response to that situation. Started fucking crying.
So now I cannot masturbate or have sex for over a month.
God dang.
And my wife is getting blue walls and blames me for going too fast, too furious.
Imagine, like, that's a lot of blood up there.
Yeah.
It fucking shoots at your fucking... Oh, man. See, I'm just going to fucking lie down for a little bit.
Just not.
That was one guy that I was watching one of those, the ER sent me to the ER.
Yeah, yeah.
And this guy had just fucking just thrown him. No, the woman, she had tossed him on the bed and he had jumped on him, right? And like, you know, like they, as like a whole, like feral fucking moment.
Right.
So she fucking lunges on him and I guess she lands right on his dick, his hard dick. And like, she hits it in such a spot that when she fucking rolls over, the blood just shoots out. So it did like a fucking fountain.
Oh.
Like a fucking Tarantino movie. Just done.
Oh, God.
And he's just like, ah.
That would be too. That would suck.
Yeah, you guys got to be careful.
Yeah.
Them girls, they be too rough sometimes.
A little bit too rough sometimes.
The cock can only take so much.
It's not made of bone.
No.
At least then it would have some integrity
to it. If it was made of fucking bone, it should be like, it would be the same size all the time, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That'd be fucking awkward to walk around with fucking hard-ons all the time. I guess like if you think about it, like evolutionary, right? Like if that was how it was, right? It would just be a normal thing.
Yeah.
Like they'd always be hard, and that would just be like how society would work and function.
Yeah.
Weird, huh?
Or if you go by Robin Williams, it's the accordion style.
Yeah.
And he calls the other curtains.
That would be a whole change of our fucking society if the dicks were always hard.
Yeah.
They were bone. It's like, come on now, get the beam up. But if they were bone, it'd be a lot tougher too.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, like,
if you broke one though,
maybe they put some titanium on there, make it stronger. How would that even fucking work? A bone cock.
I don't know if it would.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't think it. Yeah.
Imagine that connected to your pelvis.
Like, it had to be a muscle, but it's not a muscle either, is it? Or is it just tissue?
It's just tissue.
Damn. I gotta read up more on biology. I mean, you should know more about the human.
You should have been reading up more on biology after you learned about the new spots.
Oh yeah, the A spot, the P spot. I was so fucking confused about. Yeah, you're right. I gotta keep studying. Knowledge is power. I want to be the most knowledge pervert on the planet.
All right. Anything else to add before we head out today?
Just go easy, girls.
Please.
You don't want to see a fucking fountain pit. Oh, imagine like it happened a certain way, right? Where the blood just fucking hits her in the face. Then they both be fucking traumatized. Be like a fucking horror movie.
All right. With that, we will see you guys on the next one.